The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. There was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it. And when the head waiter tasted the water that had become wine, without knowing where it came from, although the servers who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves good wine first, and then, when people have drunk freely, an inferior one. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs at Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord.
I don't want to start off by filling you with fear this morning, but this is the kind of gospel passage about which an entire Bible study could be based, on which an entire Bible study could be based. So there's any number of, say, even pertinent details that really demand explanation here in this passage, but I'm going to skip over most of them, believe it or not. I'm not going to get into all of them. So I would like to encourage you to read this passage again and see what different parts and pieces jump out at you. I'd like to provide perhaps something that doesn't make itself readily apparent, and then I'd like to offer just a couple of details from the passage to help our meditation, our prayer, and the like. So the first is really the frame, the kind of frame of reference. You know, what is going on here, and how does it relate to the whole? You know, here we see John at pains to say this is the first sign that Jesus performs, and the signs we see are revealing God's glory. And there are 7 such signs in John's gospel. And just as I say, one of the things that helps us to see the conclusion of the signs, or the culmination of the signs, is that Mary appears in John's gospel only twice. Once here, and then once at the 7th sign. The 7th sign is Jesus' crucifixion. And this is the revelation of the glory of God. This is challenging for us because we have the image of Jesus' crucifixion in front of us. We have to grapple with the fact that this is the revelation of the glory of God. So I just say, like, throughout John's gospel, then you have these 7 signs, and we're meant to see that these signs are the places where heaven comes to earth. Heaven and earth are being stitched together, or I say the life of heaven is infiltrating the earth in and as and through Jesus of Nazareth. So, okay, that's your, give you the map to read the rest of John's gospel, right? It's important. And I think it's important to add a little bit of context there and say something like, it's all about a wedding. It's all about the marriage, the wedding of heaven and earth, the wedding of the marriage of Jesus to his bride. It's all there. So it's right that this is also this is the first sign, this marriage. Okay, so I want to offer 2 points, ahead of time to say the 2 important points in this passage are: 1, that Jesus is on the scene, and two, that the servers listen to Mary's command to do whatever Jesus tells them to do. And that's like the entirety of the story. And that's where we have to be at the end. Okay, we have to find Jesus on the scene. We have to do whatever he tells us. Okay, but there's a little bit more going on. For one, the scene is the scene of a personal and social catastrophe for the family throwing the wedding feast. And the young couple who would have seen this as, I don't know, not exactly the, it's a bad omen. You know, it's not a good sign for them that their marriage starts off on the wrong foot. They've run out of wine. I just say, like, that's important for us. I've had to say before, I don't drink a lot of wine. It does a number on me, but We know wine helps facilitate the party, right? And everybody knows that. And these people knew how to party in a way that we don't. Like, we can't keep it up. You know, we're like, you know, have a hard time hanging out through the end of the evening of the marriage. And these guys went for days partying, right? It's a massive celebration. I mean, likely the whole town of Cana is there. Not that it was, not I say that the whole town, but it was a big celebration. Everybody would have known about it. And, you know, even Jesus finds himself invited to it. His mother is there and the rest. I mean, it's a big party and it's meant to go on for some time. So the social and personal catastrophe is at least, I say this, it's significant for the couple, right? It's significant for the people who are throwing the party. But it's also like not that significant, right? In the sense of like you ran out of wine, right? That's a faux pas, you know. Like that's you all made a mistake. We would have appreciated if we'd had enough wine at this party. We don't, okay? That's bad on you. But it's not exactly like it's not exactly the end of the world for the other people, but for this couple, it is. And Mary being sensitive to their need brings that concern to Jesus. And then part of it is that we see this, say, the theme of renewal from within, because the jars for ceremonial washing, they're there. This is a big part of the process of the celebration. But by bringing this, putting everything they had at Jesus' disposal, you realize, like, they still don't have enough to affect any difference whatsoever, to make any difference whatsoever. But at the command and at their docility and their obedience to Jesus, the servers, they're flooded with wine, can I say? They're flooded with it. I mean, if you're like me, I hope you're not like me, but if you're like me, at least in this way, you start to do calculations, right? 6 water jars, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. So we're in the realm of 120 to 180 gallons of wine. By the time Jesus is done with it, you got 120 to 180 gallons of wine. This is like, I mean, I see Ed smiling because he bottles wine himself. You know, this is like 800 plus bottles of wine. This is an incredible amount of wine. Even given the size of the celebration, it's an incredible amount of wine. And what is it? It's like we bring our pittance before Jesus, right? We're like, this is all we got. This is all we got. We got six large jars of dirty water, right? Like, what are we going to do with this? We're just going to bring everything. And Jesus is there saying, okay, this is part of the renewal of the covenant. Like, this is part of the renewal of the relationship that God has with his people. Yes, you are going to bring everything at my command, and I am going to give you everything. And God's everything clearly overwhelms our everything, right? To the tune of 800 plus bottles of wine. Yeah, his grace overwhelms, his love overwhelms. Now, if ever we think that we're in this kind of transactional relationship with God, like, I'm going to do some things and you know, I want in return some things from you. It's complete nonsense. We can't do anything to deserve the greatness of the gift of God's own life of love. And that's what he's pouring out. He's pouring out his Spirit. And if we want to know like how abundantly he does that, how abundantly he cares for us and loves us and the rest, we need look no further than this story. This is incredible, right? The overflow of God's generosity, even to the point of fact that, like I said, it's not that big a tragedy, but Jesus is there. He's right there to provide, and not just provide, say, a sufficient amount, as it were, but to go well beyond that. And for those of us who have that experience of God, right? We who gather here to pray and bring ourselves, bring our hearts, bring our lives to God at this altar to be offered through and with and in Christ Jesus, who receive then an outpouring of his love, whether it's by, you know, just the grace that comes to us through prayer, or when we eat his body and blood, we find ourselves overwhelmed by his generosity, by his love, by his care for us. That the outpouring of his Spirit reaches us. And it opens up, I should say, and this is perhaps my last point, it opens up for us a world of new possibilities where heretofore there had only been dead-end streets. Like when we look at this scene, it's just like it's closed off until Jesus is on the scene and people are following what he tells them. Right? How about for us? Are we bringing our struggles, our difficulties, our challenges, do we bring them before God? Right? We know we've been called to be vehicles of his grace in the world. We know that we've been called to be a light to the nations. Are we finding ourselves engaged in that struggle to do so? And when we rely on our own resources, all we have is six big jars of dirty water, right? It's like, it's not enough. But if we turn over to him everything we have and everything we are, then we find our lives flooded with his grace, right? Filled by his love to overflowing. And that overflowing is where we get to pour out his life of love for the world. Yeah, and remember, so this is it for us. Again, two things. One is, Jesus has to be on the scene. So no matter where we are, we want Jesus to be there. He has to be on the scene. And if we don't feel connected to him, or we don't feel like he's close or whatever, we have to go out in pursuit of him. We have to find him. Because again, left to ourselves, all we've got is dirty water, right? We need him to be on the scene. So we have to seek him. And then when we find him, we have to be docile to his instruction. We have to be obedient to his call. He will show us. He will show us what it is we have to do, where it is we have to go. And not just that, he will pour his life out for us. That's the whole story of the seven signs, right? That's Jesus on the cross. It's a real shame, actually, that we missed the first half of the first verse of the second chapter of John's gospel here. It says, John writes, on the third day, there was a wedding at Cana in Galilee. All we got was there was a wedding at Cana. On the third day, what is the third day? It's the day of the resurrection. This is it. Jesus is creating the world anew by the outpouring of his own life of love. It's ours to receive it and embody it for a world that so desperately needs it.